Seriously, there's so much going on, I don't even know where to begin. How are we going to cover this, I ask myself, almost every day. It's just extraordinary. I have, fortunately, the website for all of you out there. There is an enormous amount of material up there, culled and picked and selected and then formatted for you. And I think most all of it is important. At least read the headlines, then you'll understand. I just had a story sent over by Henry, who is standing by here, that already in Philadelphia, they're very concerned about running out of supplies for our hospital staff, our first responders, our medical personnel. They're putting tents up already. This thing is unprecedented in our history, and it's going to get, unfortunately, a whole hell of a lot worse. Hello, Henry. Welcome back. Glad to have you on board, as always.
Hi, Jeff. It's good to be back to get some of this information out. Things, like you say, are developing very quickly. I kind of ended yesterday saying that it wouldn't be that long before the U.S. was number one. And I think it's going to happen sooner than I thought.
I'm afraid I agree with you, my friend.
Comparing the U.S. to Italy. Comparing the U.S. to Italy and how many days we are behind them, or weeks we are behind them. But I think we're getting pretty close to being where Italy is within a few days anyway. It's not weeks away. And
Notice what Henry's saying, please, everyone. A few days away. That's how enormously this is growing. It's huge, explosive, everywhere you look.
Yeah, and part of the problem is that, we're only getting a very small percentage of what's out there. There's still limitations on the testing. And so the numbers that are being reported, aren't supposed to be representing all the cases anyway. But they are so far below what the rest of the world is doing that, just the U.S. coming in the same ballpark as the other countries means whoever they're in the ballpark with, they're really in front of, because whoever you're comparing up at the top of the list, has done extensive testing, far more testing than the U.S. has. And just to give you an idea of how rapidly things are changing. Italy, for instance, it was a shock that on Sunday they reported 368 deaths. And then yesterday they reported 349 deaths. And then today they reported 345 deaths. And so they're all around 350. And it's not even clear that they're kind of plateaued at 350 because it's kind of leveling off and that's how high it is, or if they're leveling off at 350 because that's all they can handle. I mean, they've already had reports that the cemeteries are full and that they're going to the cremation. The
crematories are overworked. They can't handle it.
Right. They're backed up at the crematories. So whoever's recording the deaths is probably backed up, and they, can record 350 a day. And so for the past 3 days, they've been right around the 350 mark. So that might not even represent a plateauing. And just to give you an idea.
Henry, real quick, just when you talked about testing, this is crucial because we can't really ascertain where we are until we get testing brought up to speed. In South Korea, as of 15 hours ago, they have tested over 270,000 people. Can you imagine if we tested here even 170,000 people, how many cases we'd have?
We have already passed South Korea in deaths. South Korea's got 84, we got 107. So on the death front, we've already passed South Korea, we've already passed Germany. We're catching up to France. France is 175, we're at 107. And then after that, the only ones in front of us is Spain. Spain's made a dramatic jump up also. So Spain Iran, Italy, and China. Those are the only countries that have more deaths than the U.S. And that is with who knows how many died and were never tested in the hospitals. They just had pneumonia, you know. And so we're up there on the death side, not just the case side. Now, in the cases, we're in the top eight. And I think we'll pass France in a couple of days. And we're almost up to South Korea, and we're almost up to Germany. So we'll, in total cases, probably by next week, we'll be number five in the world. You know, we'll just have Spain, Iran, Italy, and China in front of us.
And we've only tested, friends, about 25,000 to 30,000
And these
people.
Aren't real numbers, exactly. No. Exactly. That's with extremely limited testing. And I've been going through, you know, what's happened is the state labs have set up pretty informative websites now. A lot of them have interactive maps. You can kind of zoom in on the map. They've got all the counties outlined. They've got the counties color-coded. If you hover over them, they show you how many cases there are in each of the counties, so you can get an idea where the reported cases anyway are. And they're giving more and more detail. And the more detail you look at, even though it's just, you know, a subset, because there's a lot that haven't been tested, they are kind of raising some serious questions. And you know, I've been paying attention to Pennsylvania because that's where I and most of my family are. And so I'll give you a little bit of those details. But just to give you an idea on how bad it is elsewhere, New York is going bonkers. I mean, New York today, they got up to 1,374 cases. So they're number one in the country now. They passed Seattle and Washington. Washington's also over 1,000. They're up to 1,012. But New York's up to 1,374 this morning. Bill de Blasio was on cable tonight. And he said that New York City went from 600 and something this morning to 923. There are 923 and 10 deaths in the city itself, not the state. So that's already 300 above what was reported this morning. So New York is closing in on 2,000 cases by itself. By tomorrow or the day after, they'll be up to 2,000 cases. And they're up to, this morning, they were 12 deaths, and I'm not sure how many were in New York City, but New York City's up to 10 by itself. And so those numbers are increasing. And it's still hard to get tested there. It's not like, oh, anybody can just get tested. They're ready to go. They've expanded their centers, but the numbers are going up each day or a couple times a day.
Let me say something. I want to recap what you've said. Henry said, and no one else has said this, Henry was the one who said it, that we are in a very serious position and may well turn into another Italy. It's obvious we are going to turn into another Italy. We already have stories about crematories being backed up in Philadelphia. We already have stories about hospitals pitching tents. Already this is triage time. We have only tested about 25,000 Americans total. That's it. And look what we have already. Look at the deaths. Look at the cases. My God, if we tested 250,000 people, we'd be far ahead of Italy by now. There are cases all over the place. And it's going to get... I'm sorry, I just hate saying this, but we're in deep trouble. Deep, deep trouble. Go ahead, Henry.
Yeah, and just to give you some of the idea, some idea of what's going on in Pennsylvania. Now, Pennsylvania, a week and a half ago, had zero cases. And now they're up to 100. Officially, they're at 96, I guess. But they're not counting. They're not even putting the presumptive positives in. They're waiting for the CDC to confirm it before they even add it to the website. So in Allegheny County, where I tried to get tested for the past week and can't even come close, there are 7 confirmed and 3 presumptive. And that was as of this morning. And Montgomery County, which is outside, is a Philadelphia suburb. They lead the state. They had 32 on the website, but Montgomery County itself has reported 34. And the alarming part about Montgomery County, you know, other than they've got such a high number, I mean, they've got a third of the cases in the entire state. They got 34 out of just over 100 now. They put up a table to list all 34 cases and where they are within Montgomery County. And then for each region of Montgomery County, they list the age range of the cases. Okay, so they got 34 cases. They got the ages of each of the regions within Montgomery County. And out of those 34, how many do you think are over 70?
I can't guess. Go ahead.
2. 171 and 172.
Oh my God, that's not
the
good
vast
news.
The vast majority of the cases in Montgomery County are in their 30s. They're not elderly. They're not elderly patients that you know that's not who they are. I mean,
that's some of the worst news I've ever heard on this subject,
yeah.
Henry.
The table is up. Anybody can go to it. I've got a link. It just says Montgomery County 34 confirmed cases, and if you click on the link, it'll take you to an interactive map, and they'll show where each of the regions are within Montgomery County, and there's a table that breaks down all 34 cases on what the age or age range is if they've got multiple ones in any of those specific regions. And the average age, I think, is 45. And most of them.
How many under 30?
Well, most of them are in their 30s. There's a 2-year-old.
How many in their 30s? 50%? 70%?
Yeah. I'd say at least half. Probably 60-70%.
All right, ladies.
You there?
Does it work? Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. I mean, hold on 1 second here. Let me back up.
Take your time. It's all right. Just keep in mind the Italian variant that apparently may have come out of Iran, which does not have 5G, is the one that apparently came in the back door here through the East Coast from Europe and may well be what's causing this. You're seeing young people. This is bad, bad news that we're getting here. Only 2 of the 35, or whatever the number was, over the age of 70.
Yeah, I'll give you an idea. I'll give you each region. These are all in Montgomery County. Montgomery County is suburban Philadelphia. And Cheltenham has one who's 71. Collegeville has 2. One is 41 and one is 45. Coonskin has 1 who's 55. Douglas has 1 who's 38. East Norton has 1 who's 37. Limerick has 1 who's 50. Lower Gwinnett has 2 who's 18 and 54. Lower Marion's got 6. And they range between 53 and 69. the average age of 61. Lower Moreland has one who's 20. Lower Providence has six. They range between 18 and 58. The average age is 38. That's for six of them. The average age is 38. Lower Salford has one who's 39. New Hanover has one who's two. Tacoman has two who are 34 and 35. Stipek has three who are between 32 and 37 with an average of 35. Lower Marion has two. They're 62 and 67. Upper Providence has one who's 72. And Worcester has two who are 43 and 56. So they're not 60. I mean, there aren't even that many that are in their 60s. They're basically 50s to 30s is where the vast majority, well, the majority anyway, are. And that's one county that's really broken it down and gives you the age of every case they have, and they've got 34. They had zero, you know, a week and a half ago. So, and in this particular area, these aren't just mild cases. The head of one of the hospital associations that has multiple hospitals has three that are in this area. They're either Montgomery County or Delaware County, which is right next to them, and they say they've got 40 cases in the hospital, and so that's the
40
that's how
hospitalized.
Old these people, right. Right. So these aren't the mild ones that are picked up because they happen to be, some contact of somebody and they tested them and they tested positive. They're asymptomatic or they got a mild case and they're hospitalized at home. These guys, 40 of them are in the hospital. So that gives you an idea of what's going on and why, and that is the hospital group that they're putting up tents outside because they don't want any cases coming into the hospital because they're running out of masks. And this is relatively early on the scale. I mean, they don't have any reported deaths yet in Pennsylvania, so it's not in that category here. But the deaths are going up in New York. They're going up fairly quickly, and they're still going up in Seattle, in Seattle area. A lot of those are in the extended care facilities, and those are older patients. But
One doctor, I don't know if it was in Washington or Oregon, but it was in the Pacific Northwest, said that either an ER doctor or a general surgical doctor, said they are allowed to have one fresh new mask a day. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a call from Oregon who had said that, they said it's droplets and therefore they can just use any old mask. They don't really need an N95 mask. And this guy is an OR doctor. I mean, so he's, he has exposures.
Here it is. And one mask a day for doctors in the viral center of Washington State. Oh, hold on here. Let me get this. I want to see where exactly this is. One mask a day for doctors in the virus epicenter of Washington. Two doctors in Washington State, which leads the U.S. in coronavirus deaths, have tested positive now for the disease. We can't afford to lose these people. What's wrong with Trump? What's wrong with these people? As hospitals scramble to make do with a shortage of masks, I shouldn't be reading these words. In the area of Seattle,
it sounds like Ebola in West Africa again.
It does. Oh, it does.
They're here with virus all over the place, and they don't have gloves or masks.
It's everywhere. Here, one more. In the area of Seattle that's been hardest hit, some nurses in emergency departments are washing and reusing surgical masks, gloves, and gowns. They may work on a patient for hours or more before learning that that patient tested positive for coronavirus. Right. I've got a 2-day supply of masks, so we're trying to be conservative, said Dr. Steven Anderson, an emergency room physician at the MultiCare Auburn Medical Center in suburban Seattle. You get one in the morning, you clean it, and you reuse it. Shame, shame on this government, this alleged government in Washington. This is outrageous.
Yep, they don't have the equipment, they don't have the testing, and that's how most of the healthcare workers end up getting infected, is they're working on a patient, they have no idea that they're infected. And like I said, the infection rate is much, much higher than is indicated by the numbers, because the testing is so limited. Here's another story. All these stories in Pennsylvania, because I've been paying a little bit of attention here. But I as I said yesterday, I've been trying to get tested here, and I really can't. And they, on paper, they don't really have cases here. But like I said, even though they don't have much testing going on in western Pennsylvania, and Allegheny County is where Pittsburgh is, that the main county. They're now up to 10, and that happened like in a couple of days. And the website only shows 7 because they're not even putting presumptive positives. There's 3 presumptive positives, so they're up to 10. And my kid's school district is in the news. And here's the story behind that one. This one's a little bit unbelievable. They closed all the schools in Pennsylvania. So everybody's off for like an extended spring break. And so the schools, not technically in session. Everybody's at home. And so today was the first day that they were doing online teaching. So they were going to go ahead and still have classes, I guess, remotely. And a lot of the kids had kind of left school last week is when they closed the schools. And for the online classes, they didn't have all of their books and stuff. They were still in their lockers. So they opened up the school so the kids could get their belongings out of their lockers so that they could participate in the online classes. And then one of the students that went back to school somehow mentioned that his older sibling had tested positive. And it turns out that the older sibling, who's already out of school, who's out of high school anyway, has 2 siblings that go to the Fox Chapel High School. And so a big alarm went out. So they have all these kids coming back to the empty school, but one of them, even though he's not diagnosed, is a close contact of a diagnosed case. So the school put out a bulletin, and the newspapers have a bulletin, and they got what day the kid came back, and the dates that they have to be concerned about. I guess somebody was there on Friday, so it's already Tuesday, and they just found out about it. And so now, I don't know. I guess I'll be able to get tested now, but this is in an area where you really can't get tested. I mean, when I went last week, I was told, well, you might have had a contact, but just because, they were from China and they were coughing a lot doesn't really mean that they were infected. And we have 0 confirmed cases in Allegheny County, so they obviously, never got confirmed. So you have no idea that somebody coughing from China really had the virus. They might have just had, an upper respiratory infection. So That's the logic. That as of last week, you couldn't have been exposed to a contact. You can't be a contact of anybody in Allegheny County, because Allegheny County has zero cases. And now Allegheny County has 10 cases or 10 confirmed cases. And Allegheny County is crawling with cases. And so is the entire country. They just haven't been tested, and they can't get tested even if they've got symptoms. They don't have a contact, and so you got some type of upper respiratory something, and we've only got 20 tests, so we're only going to take it on someone that's got a contact with somebody from overseas somewhere that where they have virus going, when in fact there's more virus in the U.S. than there is pretty much anywhere in the world. But they haven't been tested, so you don't know who they are. But that's kind of another local case in Pennsylvania where it's very, very difficult to get tested. And there was another site that opened up here, and I just saw that.
Hold on, Henry, one thing. The addendum to that statement, it's very, very difficult to get tested, is simple. It's because there are no tests around. Oregon is virtually out of tests. This is all on the Trump administration, every damn bit of it. They knew in early January there was a crisis. They should have started producing masks and PPEs by the tens of millions in January and February. They've done nothing. A doctor up there, Dr. Steven Anderson in Seattle, said, I've got a 2-day supply of masks. You get one in the morning, you clean it, and you reuse it. I tell my staff to guard your mask with your life, because it is your life. That's where we are. Thank you, Donald Trump.
Yeah, there's just shortages all over. And it's, I mean, he's kind of admitting there's a problem now, but I kind of heard him this morning, and he's saying, well, you had all these people that died in the swine flu pandemic. They didn't really manage that one very well. There were 11,000 deaths or something. And the problem with that, and it's probably worth reviewing that just to understand why that statement is absurd, is because if you recall, and most of your listeners can recall the swine flu outbreak in 2009. And what happened then was it started kind of similar to this outbreak. It really got started in the beginning of 2009, and it started taking over towards the end of the spring. So the end of the spring, there was seasonal H1N1, which was a bit of a problem because it was almost all Tamiflu resistant by then. So there was the Tamiflu resistant seasonal H1N1, there was H3N2, and there was influenza B. And then towards the end of the spring, the normal seasonal flu was all started to fade because it was kind of flu season was over, and the swine flu didn't. It kind of persisted. So by March, April, if you had influenza A positive, almost all of them were swine flu. So even though only the CDC had the actual test to say for certain it was swine flu, you could use influenza A kind of as a surrogate, because that's the only influenza A that was circulating by the end of March or beginning of April, that H1N1 and H3N2 were pretty much gone. And then later, April and May, the only thing around was the pandemic strain. And, as everybody knows, there are a fair number of deaths from influenza every year, and it could be 10,000-12,000. It can be 20,000-30,000 in a real bad
season,
particularly with his H3N2. It can be up, 50,000-70,000. Although they're mostly older when they get up to that level. And so what happened in 2009 is there was an effort to go ahead and get a vaccine made. And that was easier than the current vaccine for COVID because it was just a flu vaccine. And so there's a lot of experience making flu vaccines. I mean, a new vaccine is made almost every year for one or the other types. And you just take the H and the N and you put it on this backbone that you use all the time. And just pick one that has a high titer and grows fairly quickly, and then inoculate eggs and get your virus and kill it and put it in a vaccine. So it's pretty straightforward, although each one has to undergo a little bit of testing to make sure that it's not going to behave unexpectedly. And so the effort was to get a vaccine ready, and everybody kind of knew that the flu without a vaccine, you're really not going to stop it. You're not going to be able to say X, Y, and Z can't come, wherever. I mean, since most of the cases were in the U.S., there really wasn't anything the U.S. could do to block it, because that's where it was, between Mexico and U.S. is where most of the cases were, and they were being exported. But what ended up happening was that by the fall, there was no H1N1 seasonal. There wasn't even any H3N2, and there wasn't even any influenza B. The only thing that was circulating by the fall of 2009 was swine H1N1. And there ended up being, 10,000-11,000 deaths in the U.S. But there would normally be more than that if seasonal flu was circulating. So the swine flu was the only flu that was circulating in the fall. And that was accounting for all of the deaths. But those deaths in general were lower than seasonal flu. And in fact, a lot of the journalists said, well, what's the definition of a pandemic? This was swine flu and it's going to cause a pandemic. And you've got fewer deaths than you would for seasonal flu, or at least it's on a par with seasonal flu. So the deaths wasn't any higher than normal. The age distribution was a little different because a lot of the deaths were relatively young, in their 30s or 40s, and usually that age group doesn't die. But there were very few deaths in the ones that were over 65 because they had protection because they had been exposed to seasonal flu when they were growing up, and so there was enough cross reactivity that they didn't really end up getting the serious illness that the younger people had. But the bottom line was that there might have been 11,000 deaths, but those were less than there would normally be attributed to seasonal flu. So the swine flu kind of replaced that, mm-hmm. And it was at a level low enough. So they said, well, what is a pandemic? And the pandemic doesn't really have a component on a fatality rate. A pandemic just has to do with transmissibility and the ability to be a novel virus. And the swine flu was novel, that there had only been 13 cases or something, documented in the United States prior to the outbreak.
Okay,
and it wasn't
kind of
even the same swine flu.
Coronavirus as soon as you can.
Yeah. And so the bottom line was that that's what happened in 2009, is the number of deaths were relatively small, and they did have a vaccine ready. And this, for today, it's a coronavirus that's been around. There are coronaviruses. There's two that have been around for a long time, OC43 and 229E, and then there's two newer ones that were identified as a result of SARS research. But this is a novel. This is SARS-like, as you would say, 2.0. And the SARS never got to the vaccine stage. I mean, there were some vaccines that were developed, but they never went into clinical trials.
We still don't have a good SARS vaccine. People don't know that.
No, there is no SARS vaccine, and it never went into clinical trials. And part of the reason is that the virus kind of faded away.
Right.
So there wasn't really a market for a SARS vaccine because there weren't any SARS cases.
Right.
And this is kind of SARS version 2. And the old vaccine would, you know, might offer some protection, but it really wouldn't be ideal because this virus has evolved fairly far away from SARS. So as far as a vaccine is concerned, the current version is much preferable to trying to do something with the version from 17 years ago, which has changed quite a bit. So anyway, getting back to the current outbreak, the major problem is testing, and the testing is so limited that the numbers that the U.S. has relative to the rest of the world isn't really that comparable because
it's not even on the same.
It's very, very limited. Even where there's a lot of virus, like I say, here they're already running into problems with supplies in eastern Pennsylvania, and officially, the entire state has less than 100 cases. There's only 98 that have been confirmed by the CDC, and the majority of those are in eastern PA. But there're still not that many cases, but they're running out of supplies already.
How many cases, Henry? Again, and altogether there, how many?
In all of Pennsylvania, the official is 98, which includes Western
cases.
Pennsylvania, which has got about 10. So there's about 78 in eastern Pennsylvania, of which almost half are in this one county, Montgomery County.
Now imagine 5,000 cases diagnosed positive, 5,000. Pennsylvania will collapse. The healthcare system can't handle it. And we're going to lose a lot of people. They're going to get very sick healthcare workers, professionals, top doctors, nurses. We're going to lose people because of the negligence of this government to provide. And you cannot tell me that this government could not have produced millions of masks in the last 2 months. Remember the Manhattan Project? Come on, this is war. But nothing has been done.
And it's going to be the same thing with the ventilators. I mean, there aren't enough, you know, ventilators.
200,000 in the country, Henry.
Right.
200,000 in the country. They're expecting a million minimum. We'll need them with only 200,000 ventilators.
Right, and that's the situation in Italy that they wanted to avoid. They didn't want to have the situation where they have to triage and figure out who's going to get a ventilator and who isn't, and knowing that, you know, without the ventilator, the patient would likely die. And that's where we're heading, and we're not that far away. And it's like there are already enough patients that are infected that may not be in the hospital yet, but are infected, and they are going to progress. And these numbers, the ages of the ones in Montgomery County, you know, tells you that if you got 30 and 40 and 50-year-olds who are in the hospital, they're not these mild cases that happen to be antibody positive. You get that virus into a nursing home, and it's just going to run right through that. Most of the patients are going to die. You know, it's not going to be.
Let's talk about the homeless living
like
on the streets
Seattle.
In their 50s and 60s and 70s. Same thing.
Right. Because most of these that are in their 30s and 40s, not only aren't they that old, they likely don't have underlying conditions. You know, right. The underlying conditions are chronic conditions that develop when you're 50, 60, 70 years old. They're not 30-year-olds. 30-year-olds don't have these conditions, but they're listed as positives. And like I said, the 40 that was quoted, you know, covers most of the people that have been identified. There aren't that many more than 40 that have been identified in the area. I mean, there's a little bit more than that, but it's like, you know, at least half of the cases in the area are in the hospital. And so, you know, when they do all these calculations on who's going to be in the hospital, they're not doing 40-50% of the cases are going to be hospitalized. They're doing 10 or 15% of the cases are going to be hospitalized.
That's right.
They're assuming that most of these cases, when they're talking about, you know, millions, well, it's more than millions. I keep seeing estimates now that they say within a year that 30-50% of the population will have this virus. So, you know, that's 150 million people. So 150 million people have it. And if you've got anything approaching, you know, they're figuring 10% end up in the hospital or 15% end up in the hospital.
15 million people.
Right, right. That's 15 million. And this is saying that it might not be 15 million. It might be 30 or 40 million. And, I mean, there aren't that many beds, and there certainly aren't that many ventilators to do millions.
200,000 is all we have. That's it.
Yeah. So there are all these issues out there, and you know, that's why, you know, all these draconian measures. Well, they're not really draconian yet. They're in the highly suggested categories, you know, that, well, let's not
we have 924,000 beds total. 924,000 total beds. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
And so that's why people are kind of wondering why are these countermeasures so extreme? And, you know, and if they look at the confirmed cases, they look at Pennsylvania and say, you only got 100 cases. You know, how many flu cases you have in Pennsylvania? You know, this is only 100 cases. What's the problem here? You know, that's not that many. And, you know, only 10% of them end up in the hospital. So if you got 100, you're talking about 10 people in the hospital for the state of Pennsylvania. That shouldn't be an issue. You know, and, it's just that the numbers are just wrong. That the numbers are just a tiny fraction of what's actually out there. And it doesn't really matter if people are developing pneumonia. They're going to need hospitalization regardless of whether there's been a test that's been run on them or not. And unfortunately, a lot of those that are in the hospital with pneumonia have not been tested because they don't really have an indication.
They're in the hospital with pneumonia, infecting nurses, healthcare professionals,
right.
Anybody who
right.
comes in the room because they haven't been tested.
Right. They haven't
nice.
Been tested. They don't know what they have. They just have pneumonia, and they're not in the same room with the same ward with the ones that have been tested and are known to be tested and supposed to be in a negative pressure room, and they're supposed to have, you know, serious PPEs on when they go in and interact with them. And they have no idea, you know, who is, you know, just a bacterial pneumonia case or some other virus that's relatively innocuous, and who's actually got this virus, which, you know, is purported to be relatively innocuous, saying that, you know, only 10 or 15% of those that get this ever even get in the hospitals. And, that's not what the head of the hospital, and this is Mainline Health. They've got he just cited three that were kind of in this area. And he says, A, we don't have masks, and B, we've got 40 patients in the hospital already. And that's a significant percentage of the patients that have been tested. And he's probably not even counting ones that are in the hospital that haven't been tested, because he's only talking about, you know, cases that have the virus. So the numbers are remarkable. I'm kind of going through each of the states and updating it, and they like I said, the websites are worth taking a look at. They're pretty interactive. They're you know, pretty easy to find. I've got them all linked. I got a page that's got all 50 states, and there are all 50 now. West Virginia has a positive now, so all 50 states in the District of Columbia have at least one confirmed case, and the numbers are ratcheting it up pretty dramatically. That these sites are updated during the week. They're all updated daily, and some of them are updated two or three times during the day, and a lot of them update on the weekends also. So they're updating 7 days a week, and there's a fair amount of detail. You know, they don't all list the ages, especially individual ages, broken down as far as these are concerned. There's kind of just broad age groups, and I haven't really gone to see how common this is, but it's just what you had said as far as coming in from Europe, that what's happened is that while screening was on for Wuhan or China, after they had pretty much locked the whole country down, or certainly Hubei province down, there were, you know, the cases were starting to spread in Europe, and Italy was the primary source of the introduction of the virus. And then Iran was the primary source for the virus in the Middle East. And, you know, U.S. tourists that went to Italy for, you know, a ski vacation, or, you know, schools went and took a class trip to some country, you know, somewhere in Italy, particularly northern Italy, they ended up getting infected and bringing the virus back. And essentially, a lot of those were on the East Coast. And so the East Coast was getting seeded by these viruses. And like I said, the sequence for the index case for New Rochelle just came out yesterday, and that was this ORF 8, but it had markers that are found in the European isolates. So
it's a hybrid between the ORF 8 and the Italian, perhaps, are you saying? Or Spanish?
Well, just to clarify, because there's confusion on this. Basically, you've got the basic Wuhan virus, okay?
Yeah.
And the ones that were isolated initially out of Wuhan, they represented kind of the basic sequence of the virus. And so there are viruses that are identical to those. So they've got zero changes. And there's this ORF8 lineage relative to the Wuhan, you know, the initial Wuhan isolates. This has two genetic changes. It has one in the ORF8, and it's got another one upstream in the you know, ORF1AB. And so it's got two changes relative to the basic one. And then as it evolved, it would pick up additional ones. So the initial viruses that came into the U.S. That were identified anyway were from China. They generally were from Wuhan. And so they would have the basic plus a few others. So this ORF8 that came into the West Coast generally had one or two additional changes which could be found in Asia. And so they kind of were the Asian version of the ORF8. But then there's another version of the Orphate that's circulating in Europe. So it's got those same two. It's got the Orphate and the one upstream, but then it's got additional changes on it. And those additional changes are not found in the West Coast ones that came to the U.S., for instance. They're found in other viruses that are circulating in Europe. And okay. So they've got the same two to define the lineage. And then to further refine it, they've got markers from Europe, whereas the ones on the West Coast have markers from China, like Guangdong province. That's what a lot of them ended up having. And that's why they matched that. The one in Chicago had that and had these additional markers that were found in Guangdong. So it's Orphate, but kind of the...
I got it.
The Chinese version versus the one in New Rochelle, which is Orphate, but it's got additional markers that come from Europe and throughout Europe. I mean, there were some that were in Spain, some that were in France, but they weren't the one that's really in Italy. The one in Italy, that's starting to come up. It hasn't shown up that much yet because it's a more recent introduction. These were the ones that started to spread, 3 weeks ago or so on the anniversary of the Metropole Hotel. That's when it started to spread
in Europe.
And it was spreading in the U.S., but it wasn't being detected. So anyway, the numbers are going to go up, and the U.S. is pretty much where Italy is or was a couple of days ago. And
that's right.
It's going to keep going in that direction.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll be back tomorrow night, Henry and I. Thank you, Henry, as always. We'll talk to you tomorrow.